Mexican Soccer Show on World Football Day.
Big welcome to the Mexican Soccer Show. We're going to have all the reaction from Mexico's 4-2 win against Finland up there in San Diego. I'm Tom Marshall from down here in Guadalajara. And with me today, co-host Naib Moran over there in Spain in Madrid. Naib, how's it going over there?
It's going pretty smooth. Tom, last night in Madrid, Real Madrid played Sevilla in Santiago Bernabéu. There were 10 goals in the game. The last time that happened was in the 1960s. So, it was a huge event over there with the Madridismo. And, of course, Welshman Gareth Bale is hitting the goals. You know, he was paid to do so. And it's a great game from Gareth Bale last night. But other than that, I mean, Mexico played last night. For me, it was a 5 a.m. start kind of deal. So, I mean, I catched part of the second half because I had to wake up 6:45 for work, but it was a game that left a lot of conclusions by the looks of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, obviously Herrera, there was no surprises starting from the beginning. You know, I thought that, you know, his lineup was 7 American players, 3 from León, and then Oribe Peralta from Santos Laguna. You know, I thought, you know, and they played, did exactly what he said, tried to get that, you know, the America style of play going. And I thought, I don't know, I thought for the first 25 minutes, thought it went really well. I thought they were pressing so much, you know what I mean? And like really like almost suffocating Finland. Finland just couldn't get a few passes together. But I don't know, I thought that after Mexico made it 2-0, you know, they let Finland back into it with some, you know, really poor defending from a free kick there. And you know, I thought after that, from that period when Finland equalised, I think, around the half-hour mark till half-time, I thought it was a real worry. I mean, in general, I think the game was a positive for Mexico, but I thought there was a real worry that head started to drop again, that kind of confidence that we've seen, you know, being drained from Mexican players, like, all over 2013. You know, it did the same, you know what I mean? And Finland looked like they could definitely get an equaliser half-time. And then, you know, 2 minutes after half-time, Oribe Peralta scores a deflected, you know, a massive deflection for his goal to put Mexico back up. But then Finland again came back with an own goal from Topo Valenzuela. You know, I thought, you know, some positives there. But you know what? I think if I'm New Zealand, Ricky Herbert, I think the coach there, I think there's some cracks that can be exposed.
Yeah, I think Tom, you bring in a name like Topo Valenzuela, defender, and then also he played alongside Rafa Márquez and Maza Rodríguez. And when I say those names, I think about it plenty of times, and I don't see speed no more. I mean, Maza Rodríguez was never a speedy defender. Rafa Márquez is reaching a point in his career that a speed is not his forte. His forte is his playing with the ball on his feet and giving a pass to midfielders like Gullit Peña or Juan Carlos Medina, like it was last night. You know, and I think out of all the conclusion, out of all the analyzing of the game, I mean, yeah, Mexico won 4-2 against a Finland C team, to point that out. But, you know, those little mistakes, mental mistakes in the defensive end are worrying because by the looks of it, this is what Piojo believes will be, you know, the defenders that will play in the playoffs.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, obviously, his reports coming out, he's been giving interviews today that you know, he's not going to call up any European players, and if he does, it's going to be, you know, one or two maximum. Which, you know, we'll move on to that part. I think it's a mistake. But, yeah, I thought, you know, looking at the positives for Mexico, I thought Medina in the centre midfield, I thought he had a really good game. You know, very simple in the way he uses the ball, you know, positioning pretty good, stuff like that. You know, just continued his America form, really. And I thought Montes and Peña did okay as well, like kind of in the attacking roles. I still think up front there's a question mark, you know, about, I mean, I think the question now is who's playing alongside Oribe Peralta. I thought he was absolutely brilliant again, and he's like, he's been brilliant every time, you know, he's played for Mexico recently. And I don't know, if you look at that Mexico's last goal. If you watch it again on YouTube and watch how he holds up the ball. He doesn't go down. Absolute strength to keep the ball. You know, turns and then has the vision to kind of, you know, to put in Escobosa for his debut goal. You know, it was unbelievable. I mean, he's really, you know, shining at the minute, Oribe Peralta. And I think now it's a question of who's going to play alongside him. Raul Jimenez in the first half I didn't think he convinced. I thought it was a bit quiet. Herrera said that, you know, Jimenez in the best form of his life. When we saw in the CONCACAF Champions League, Jimenez almost missed an open net, you know, hit the post when really it's more difficult to miss.
You know, it's a point in his career, though, that is really intriguing with Jimenez because, I mean, he comes from this world like America, you know, with all the pressure and coming from a young age and actually making an impact in a team with the presence like America has and then winning the title. And on top of that, you add the fact that he scored that chilena that came out of nowhere. You know, it was a moment of greatness in his career. And, you know, those moments of greatness are not repeated, you know, every now and then. You dream about those moments like Jimenez lived in against Panama and Azteca. And, of course, it's normal to see that, you know, he might hit this bump at this moment where he's needed the most in not finding a groove that will be able to help Peralta. And because Peralta, like you said, Tom, if Peralta wasn't erupting in his professional career right now, probably Mexico wouldn't even be talking about a playoff chance against New Zealand. Peralta shined against Panama, shined against Costa Rica, and scored in vital goals, I think, in those two games. And yesterday, I mean, a goal and two assists, like you just said. I mean, Peralta's everywhere. Peralta is the symbol of this team that, you know, is having a tough time making it to its sixth consecutive. What would it be? Its sixth consecutive World Cup.
Yeah, no, it's stuff to think about, and I think.
And then you see the names: De Nigris, Jimenez. You know, I think those are the two options that come to mind right now. Could you add another option there, Tom, or what do you think?
Well, if you wanted a real wild card, I'd say Alan Pulido because I'm a big fan of him. But you know, I also don't think he's quite ready for that yet either. But I mean, for me, I mean, let's move on to the European players. We've talked about, you know, Valenzuela making that error. You know, I can't believe, you know, I think Valenzuela, I don't want to take anything away from him, a very good player. Is he an international? I don't think so, you know what I mean? When you've got a player like Héctor Moreno over there in Spain playing, yeah. So, you know.
I actually, Tom, that you brought up Héctor Moreno, you know, I was debating about the situation or looking at the situation that Piojo has on his hands, the fact that he's not contemplating European-based players. And Héctor Moreno has been a player that has been consistent with the Mexican national team since 2010 with Javier Aguirre. I mean, it doesn't matter if the coach was Chepo, Mesa, or Bucetich. Moreno always brings a consistency. And several weeks ago, Espanyol played against Atlético de Madrid, and Espanyol got the victory. Moreno played against Diego Costa. Diego Costa right now is the most informed forward in any European league. And Héctor Moreno looked really solid. I mean, and, you know, you think about it, if there's one player perhaps that could bring that solidness to the Mexican defense, that's Héctor Moreno, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, first up, we've got to mention that, you know, Miguel Herrera has been... In every press conference, he said the same thing. He said he's worried that, you know, players coming over from Europe, they'll only have a couple of days to prepare. You know, obviously the altitude of Mexico City for the first leg against New Zealand. You know, the fact that Mexico are playing in the afternoon, so it's going to be hot. It's not going to be a nice, you know, environment to play in. And obviously, he said what he's saying is that he's got his players in camp, the ones that are, you know, based in Mexico. He's had time to work with them. He's got this America base. So he's saying, why bother with the Europeans? You know what I mean? If, you know, if I've got this tight group that I'm knitting together, you know, why risk the Europeans? But you know, I was actually watching a bit of CNN the other day about NFL. And, you know, NFL are now playing in London. And, you know, I know there are factors that are different. But, you know, there was an interview with one of the players and he's saying, you know, with sports science these days, there's ways, you know, that obviously the way you eat, the way you can travel and, you know, be in pretty decent condition to play games like this, you know what I mean? There are ways of doing it. And I just think in such a massive, these two massive, massive games, I'm pretty sure that, you know, even if you know, players aren't going to start, I'm pretty sure you want Moreno, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's big games. He's playing every week against top strikers in Spain. And I'm pretty sure you want Giovanni Dos Santos because he just scored 2 goals for Villarreal the other day. You know, he's playing well. He's... you know, he's a player that can do stuff and to make things happen and I think you at least want him on the bench and the other one's Chicharito. I mean, he also got two goals in his last game. He's got three goals in 2 games now for Manchester United. Again, another big player. I understand they haven't played that well.
And he scored a penalty, by the way, on one of those goals.
No. But you know, I think I just don't see the reasoning. I mean, I think I wrote on Twitter, I mean, you know, Mexico need a goal with 15 minutes left against New Zealand in New Zealand. Quick Mendoza or Giovanni Dos Santos? I mean, really, who do you want to put on? Who are the New Zealand defenders going to be, you know, really? Yeah. And to see, I mean, I'm pretty sure New Zealand with this, you know, with the Europeans not playing will be pretty happy. And the same thing with, you know, Aldo De Nigris off the bench to nick a goal or Chicharito.
And I think, Tom, there's 2 points to take a look at right now. You know, if this was in 2000, back 4 years ago when Costa Rica had to play Uruguay, you know, for that spot in the World Cup, I'm pretty sure if Mexico was put in that situation, I'd say that, you know, it would be a bizarre idea for Piojo to say, oh, I think, you know, we don't need the players from Europe. I think I have a good base here. You know, that would be a bizarre idea if it was Uruguay. Because of its history, because it's won World Cups before, because it has players like Luis Suarez, and so forth. And then there's a second point that he hasn't mentioned. I think, you know, you bring your player like Giovanni, Chicharito, that are in the offense, and you have to introduce them to a new idea, a new tactical scheme. You know, that takes a while to late. And it also includes the fact that they will have to play with players they hadn't played before. For example, now Negro Medina seems to be the player that will control the midfield of Mexico. Medina and Giovanni have never played before together. And I think the fact that, you know, well, Jimenez plays with Medina, there's more connection with the players. The fact that he can line up almost as many America players as he wants. And I think that sort of supports a little bit his idea as to taking this decision that is questionable, but is a decision made by a coach that, you know, has proven that is capable to take these big decisions, you know. In America, I think when he was coach, you know, he had it tough sometimes with Chucho Benitez. You know, Chucho Benitez wanted to be this the star of the team and everything, and Piojo always had to sort of control the water, you know, calm it down, basically, and it led to a title. So I think he does have a respect right now to make these decisions that, again, might be questionable and could be really different if the opponent was an Uruguay as opposed to a New Zealand because of the historical factors that are around that.
Yeah. I find it like fascinating to like compare, you know, Mexico not calling up foreign-based, you know, European-based players. Compare it to, I think you're right about the opposition. I mean, I think it does come into play. I mean, I go back to the same thing though, just to contest that point that, you know, like you definitely have them at least on the bench. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you definitely bring them in and have a look at them. And see how they do fit. See how, you know, in training, see how they do. See how they're feeling, see if they're 100%. And, you know, if they aren't, then, all right, put them on the bench. You know, I'm sure New Zealand, especially in Mexico City, I mean, you know, if Mexico are 1-0 up, you know, after an hour, I'm pretty sure they're not going to want to see Giovanni and Chicharito come off the bench. the other thing that I think that, I mean, really intrigues me, and I think it's what keeps me really interested in Mexican football, is like, and I talk about it a lot on the show, but, you know, putting Mexican football in the perspective, the global perspective. And I think if you do that with this decision not to call up, you know, European-based players, I mean, honestly, like, think about it.
I mean, Uruguay, you know, is going to Jordan to play its playoff, and there's, I mean, there's going to be a Suarez going to Jordan, there's going to be a Cavani going to Jordan,
yeah.
And they're planning to have this type of concentration facility sort of deal going on in Turkey. You know, I think Lugano played his best football in Turkey. So now, and then Muslera, the goalkeeper, played in Galatasaray. I don't know. I think he's still in Galatasaray. So, I mean, there's a connection there. So before going to Jordan, Uruguay is going to train in Turkey.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, but you know, can you imagine Uruguay, you know, being like, oh, no, Suarez, forget him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Forget Suarez. We're just going to go with domestic-based players, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And also, I also come to the conclusion, sort of, I mean, Mexican football is different, you know, plain and simple. There's so many things that go around the sport, you know, that for example, this case, that Liga Bancomer MX players are asked to leave their club so they can train with the Mexican football team under a new coach, you know, in a matter of weeks. You know, it just... This kind of stuff happens because of the lack of respect to projects. I mean, if there were projects that were respected over and over again, stuff like this wouldn't happen. I mean, your team, there's not a clear-cut idea of what the team plays. There's not a clear-cut idea of who can play for the national team. You know, Cinha comes back at 37 years old. You know, that's not a project. I mean, that's something done in the last minute. It's done because there's no other choice available. If everything was done correctly in a process that followed years of you know, building up for this moment that is the World Cup. You know, right now it's stuff like this that European-based players are not coming to play these fundamental games. A curse, because there's just no respect for projects.
Yeah, yeah, but I think even aside from that, just from a short term point of view, I mean, it's like, you know, we've mentioned Uruguay, but imagine the US fell into the playoff, and you know they're not going to call up Tim Howard and Michael Bradley. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. It's unthinkable. Of course they would. You know what I mean? Every country. I can't think of another country that would.
There's not a difference. There's just not a country, I think, in the world. That has this situation. I mean, yeah. it's so much of Mexican football that it just... It's because if you think about it right now, Tom, for example, Sweden with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Imagine Sweden without Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the playoffs against Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, it's unthinkable right now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, let's move on to... You know, one thing I was thinking watching that game last night was... You know, obviously, the Mexican Federation have a deal with some Soccer United marketing to play, I think it's 5 games a year in the United States. Obviously, the mainly friendly games, I think most of them are FIFA dates. I think 3 are FIFA dates and 2 aren't. Obviously, it's big money for the Federation. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's good for Mexico fans in the US to go and see the team. But I think it's something that, you know, after this New Zealand game, you know, goes and, you know, Mexico hopefully in the World Cup, I think it's something that really has to be looked at again, you know what I mean? Because it's just, you know, playing games like that last night in San Diego, not many people there, playing those games that was it Nigeria early in the summer, you know what I mean? Yeah. Nigeria or Ivory Coast.
Well, it was Ivory Coast in New York.
Yeah, and I mean, I just don't think they prepare the team for what's in front. You know what I mean? You know, you had that tough trip down to Costa Rica. You know, you've got tough trips to CONCACAF places. You know, El Salvador, Guatemala, all of these, even Jamaica. There's really difficult places to go, and you look at like the planning that the US Federation have done for this, you know, hexagonal And you look at the games they've played in preparation, you know what I mean? What was it, Bosnia away?
Yeah, Bosnia at Sarajevo, for example.
Yeah, Italy away. You know, I think they played Poland away, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that was Mexico. Mexico played against Poland. I mean, that was a few games, you know. Mexico, the last games that they played in Europe was against Poland and Warsaw and against Chile and Barcelona.
Yeah, but I mean, that's going back a couple of years now, isn't it?
But that was the last time the Mexican national team stepped foot on European soil playing friendly games.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I think Mexico really suffered from that, you know what I mean? You know, I think US have also been to Russia.
Yeah.
You know, aren't nice places to go, and these are all in the last, like, 12 months as well. So, you know, I think you've got a big difference there between the preparation between Mexico and these nice, easy home games, you know, in nice, big, you know, American stadium, you know, I don't think it's the right preparation. I also think that if you play a few games in Europe, then obviously the European players, you know, they don't have to travel for once, you know what I mean? You know, you can get the whole team together and stuff like that. And I mean, I think it's definitely something that the Federation have to look at and not just be thinking in terms of how we're going to make loads of money. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the transformation, Tom, that has to occur one day in the Mexican Football Federation. I think right now they have been in this sort of, this zone, this comfort zone that has always worked. I mean, you know, they make the World Cup, they make certain amount of money, and it just keeps repeating itself. I mean, there hasn't been a moment of complete change in the Mexican Football Federation of saying, you know what, we have to stop doing this kind of deal that we've been doing for the past years and transform ourselves. I mean, in the Mexican Football Federation, in my opinion, in Spanish, we have the saying that venden mucho humo. You know, they say a lot of fake stuff that's going to happen and it never does. And I think right now, you know, with the ways that they're confronting this emergency situation, I mean, it's not one of the most proudest moments in Mexican football history. I mean, it's not something that you want to be showing off to the world. And I think they need a huge, huge bust that will make them change, because in my opinion, they're not going to change if they see that at least 30,000 people show up for a game of Mexico national team against a Finland C team and so forth. Now it's just, I think they're going to play South Korea in San Antonio in the Alamo Dome. And the Alamo Dome, you know, it's not even a football stadium. It doesn't even have real grass in there. They play basketball in that place. You know, that kind of stuff, it just doesn't make sense. And I mean, and this is going to happen in case Mexico does, in fact, win its ticket against New Zealand.
That last friendly game against Ivory Coast was a joke, thinking back. You know, that Ivory Coast just, like, played the best players as subs.
Yeah. Just,
what is going on? And you could just tell they weren't really into it, you know what I mean?
I mean, they went to take pictures to Times Square.
Yeah, it was just, you know, something that has to change. Anyways, Giovanni Dos Santos, over there in Spain, in El País, in the newspaper El País, he's been I really enjoyed it. He rarely speaks to Giovanni, but he came out with some really pretty bold statements, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think the interview was conducted by a journalist, El País journalist based in Valencia, Cayetano Ross, and right now I can't remember the other journalist's name. It was an interview in which Giovanni recounted his career, basically. I mean, a career that started in Barcelona with FC Barcelona, his starting days in Monterrey and how he actually got there. And right now, of course, you know, Giovanni Dos Santos, it's a top five player in La Liga because of the start that the Villarreal has, and the interest is there. You know, El País is a prestigious newspaper in Spain, and for him to come that day as the main sports article was important. And I mean, he made his voice heard. Perhaps, you know, it wasn't, for some people like Pio Herrera, it wasn't the correct way to show, you know, his opinion. But I think Giovanni, you know, used this opportunity, which he rarely gives to any journalist, Mexican, Spanish, you name it, English, and showcase his points of view about the game and what's wrong in Mexican football. He talked about Carlos Vela and why he didn't go play with the Mexican national team. He also expressed his thoughts on how it was with Chepo de la Torre, about the idea of the World Cup and so forth. But I think it just, he expressed his thoughts. I mean, I think any person in the world is free to express his thoughts no matter where. And yeah. And I think, you know, the criticism coming from Mexico to Giovanni has been a little bit harsh. I think, you know, he understands what kind of player he is. But unfortunately, he hasn't been able to connect with a coach in Mexico like he has been able to connect with Marcelino Garcia Toral in Villarreal and in Racing de Santander.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he basically said it. The criticism is basically what, you know, most pundits on Mexican TV and former players have all been saying as well. You know, he says the team lacks a style and an idea of, you know, what it should be doing on the field, like an identity more, you know, basically.
Yeah.
You know, a real identity about how it's going to go out and get a result, the style of play. And he said four coaches in a month says it all. I mean, it does. I mean, there's no way, nobody can deny that. It says it's been a disaster and the organisation is a real mess, you know what I mean? I think it gives us, I mean, this is only Dos Santos, but I for me, this gives us a real insight into, you know, what I think, you know, the feeling within the squad is. I mean, definitely amongst the European players. And I think it might just be a factor in, you know, why these players haven't been called up or won't be called up to Herrera's squad for the New Zealand games. I mean, they might, you know, Giovanni complains that, you know, when things go wrong, that, you know, those of us based in Europe take all the blows, and he's kind of justifying Carlos Vela, you know, rejecting call-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely a intriguing interview. And,
yeah,
you know,
I think it's interesting what you just brought up about Carlos Vela, Tom, and what Giovanni said about Carlos Vela. I mean, I think it puts already in perspective two minds on the situation that surrounds Carlos Vela and his not accepting a call-up for El Tri. Carlos Vela had an interview with Diario AS, you know, several months ago towards the end of last season, and he expressed that when he was in Arsenal, he had lack of minutes. He would accept the call-ups and come to play with El Tri, but he didn't like the fact that when he came to El Tri, he was expected to score goals all the time, because he played with Arsenal. He was an Arsenal player, but he really rarely played for the first team, you know, and that, you know, it stayed in his mind. And now that he's actually, you know, getting good games with Real Sociedad, you know, he remembers those days that, you know, he was bashed once, twice, because of that, what you just said. I mean, put the blame on the foreign-based players.
Yeah, no, definitely worth reading the interview there. And, you know, I don't know, even Herrera's now starting to play as in terms of other European players. So there are a few options. Ochoa, we haven't even mentioned. I mean, I don't think he's done anything wrong to, you know, not deserve a call-up, you know what I mean? I mean, I think it's Moises Muñoz, it doesn't... You know, I think he's a good keeper. I think he's like a bit like Valenzuela. And, you know, he's a good Liga MX keeper, good Liga MX defender. But in terms of international and, you know, having that experience, I think it is a worry. And you've got players like Giovanni and Chicharito playing with this kind of huge pressure and expectation every week, you know what I mean, in front of, you know, packed houses. So, you know, it is slightly strange. Anyways, moving on to domestic matters. What have we got going on in the Liga MX at the minute? Just two rounds of games to play, and really, I mean, the way it looks right now going into this weekend's matches is that, you know, Tigres is the real team that's trying to get into that last playoff place, or the last two. You've got Chiapas, Querétaro, Tigres, and Veracruz. I think it's looking like two of those four for those final two places. So, you know, definitely. Keep an eye on those games this weekend. Chiapas have got Santos. Tigres have got León at home, so two really hard games for them too. Veracruz at home to Monterrey, who are just terrible at the minute. I don't really know what's going on with them. I mean, it's just been a disaster since, well, all season, but especially since Vucetich left. And, you know, I think they're struggling going into the Club World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, at Monterrey, I think, is that, you know, it's going through that change, I think. You know, maybe new players have to come in, and other players that are in the institution right now have to leave. You know, and it's just a change of moments. I think, you know, the team coming in this season wasn't, I mean, it had Dorlan Pavón as its superstar signing, and all of a sudden he leaves to Valencia during the season. And then, of course, they change coaches. So it's difficult moments for Monterrey, a club that was consistent and had a good project going on there.
Yeah, Defo, I mean, they've got a new stadium coming up next summer as well. I mean, I don't know. I really am a bit frustrated with it because they sell out every week, Monterrey. They've got the Club World Cup coming up in December and they've got a new stadium next year. It's like, it's a perfect job for somebody, you know what I mean? And it's disappointing to see it going bad, you know, this right now, you know what I mean? Atlas making some headlines. Obviously, on Tuesday, the Copa MX final, Morelia in the Estadio Morelos. Hopefully, I'm going. They sorted out the tickets and the travel to get there because Michoacán, there's a lot of violence at the minute. So, you know, it's not the best place to be, but we're going to see if we can do it so that travel by day and stuff like that.
Just stay safe. Just stay safe. But, I mean, it's looking pretty good for Atlas and winning that Copa MX.
Yeah, it's going to be a big event, I think, for both teams. Morelia need a trophy, and Atlas are just desperate. But I think the more important thing is Atlas are officially for sale. You know, and I think it could be fascinating. On November 19th, they've got a meeting where you know, any offers that have come in are going to be analysed and voted on. But it's a big thing for the club. The 124 owners have decided, they've actually made it. That, you know, that they are going to sell the football side of the club. I mean, Atlas have also got country clubs and sports clubs in Guadalajara, but the football side they're going to sell. They reckon it's about $60 million that's going to be up for, but they've got about a bit over $20 million debt. So, you know, we'll see what happens come in.
Oh my gosh!
But what could be fascinating is that we've seen this divide in Mexico football recently between, you know, the Televisa crew.
Yeah, the Televisa crew, and then the Tebasteca crew, and now Carlos Slim comes. Now
crew's in town. So we've got. It's going to be interesting to see if any of those major players. I mean, they can't, because of the multi ownership is going to be phased out. You know, in the next couple of years, but it's going to be interesting to see if any of the allies kind of, you know, try and buy that club, you know what I mean? Like, I think it'd be interesting the way Carlos Slim's, like, trying to get into the TV market. Be interesting if someone steps in, you know, someone who's a close associate of his, you know, to take over Atlas and you know, maybe renegotiate their TV deal. You know, it just strengthens their position. So I think it's going to be interesting what kind of people do come in.
Although that's and then also, Tom, there's this other guy that's, like, getting into the big picture of buying football teams. His name is Amado Yáñez, and he is part owner of Querétaro, Nesa, Delfines del Carmen, and Pumas Morelos, and he's actually really close. I mean, I think the news will be confirmed soon in November, just tomorrow starts November, that he will buy Alcorcón, which is a second division football team in Spain. So, I mean, you know, and Carlos Slim has some shares in Real Oviedo, which is a third division club in Spain as well.
Yeah, what's his name?
Amado Yáñez. I think that's a name that, you know, will come out a lot, so our listeners should Google him. But he's not that known, but he's a big guy also, and he's into that Petróleo with Pemex and so forth.
Yeah. I think the other name that came up this morning in one of the local papers was some politician businessman from Michoacán, typed in his name. I'm not even going to say his name. But, typed it in, and the first thing that comes up is like, you know, getting done for millions of pesos corruption. I was like,
oh, okay.
Oh dear. It's be typical Atlas if that does happen. moving over town. Chivas lost 2-0 on Wednesday night. Sorry, against Santos Laguna. Just more disaster for Chivas. Jorge Vergara down at training on Thursday morning. Long conversation with Juan Carlos Ortega, the Chivas coach. Long conversation with Dennis DiClossi, the sporting director. I mean, the big thing is Vergara going to resist making big changes? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, he completed 11 years on Wednesday as the owner of the club. And, you know, they've gone 12 games now without a league win. Just a big disaster at the moment for Chivas. And, it's difficult what else to say. It was actually quite weird because... Angelica Fuentes, who's Vergara's wife and business partner, you know, was saying that her husband had revived Mexican football. I don't know if you saw that name.
Yes, I did. Angelica Fuentes coming there with news and so forth. I mean, if you can say, you know, when Jorge Vergara came into Chivas, I think that whole idea of working the youth systems and focusing a lot on those players, you know, that could be said that, you know, that wasn't really stressed so much, you know, from other owners, you know, from America or from Cruz Azul. It was always for those teams, Cruz Azul and America, to always buy the big star players, you know, bring in a Zamorano, bring in a Piojo López, bring in, you know, Chelito Delgado or Lucho Figueroa from Argentina's youth players from Argentina and bring them to Mexico. You know, it was always about bringing the big. When Jorge Vergara came in as owner of Chivas, he did stress that a lot, and there were good players that came out from that, you know, pulling for the youth in Chivas, you know, and say Venado Medina came out from there, you know, the Maza Rodriguez, who, you know, whatever, he might be criticized right now, but the player played in PSV Eindhoven and Stuttgart, he played in Europe, Carlos Salcido. You know, he did stress that, you know, but I can, you know, that he changed a lot in Mexican football. You know, I think that's a big statement for a person like Vergara, who has not shown patience, you know, with the projects that he puts forward, like the Cruyff project. I mean, if he had patience, you know, who knows where Chivas would be right now.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be any worse.
you see? So, I mean, it's one of the things right now that puts you to think. I mean, you know, because if Vergara would have continued with Cruyff's project, it wouldn't have been Vergara's fault. It would have been Cruyff's fault because he put money to bring in Cruyff and do this project. But he lost patience.
Yeah, I think he didn't want to keep spending money. But Fuentes was also saying that, you know, the resources are there to strengthen the squad over the off season, and you know, the club like is in really healthy shape financially. But you know, I think even those statements in themselves just kind of prove the massive gulf between, you know, fans and the owners. You know what I mean? Like Fuentes is quite, you know, enthusiastic about the club and how it's going. I mean, they got a $60 million contract. I think it's for 5 years with Univision in the US. You know what I mean? Things like that are obviously great for the owners. You know what I mean? Got money coming in, but you know, for fans, when they see the team just being so poor, I mean, I think it's difficult to see them going any lower, Chivas at the minute, but we'll see. Pumas as well, Chivas Pumas on Sunday. I mean,
what a game. Yeah, you know, to save the season in a sort of way. I mean, it's good because the Pumas Chivas have, you know, they've had this flair in the last seasons or so. You know, and both right now are not, they're not the teams that should be, you know, for Mexican football. And I point that out because I think they're two teams that always produce some of the top Mexican footballers that have ever played the game, you know, and right now it's just not happening.
Yeah, bad news. Anyways, that brings the show to an end. Definitely getting nearer to the New Zealand game. We're going to have, you know, a lot of stuff going on the show. beforehand to you know, fully preview it. But for now, enjoy the weekend matches. Don't forget the Copa MX final on Tuesday. And, yeah, see you next time.
All right, and make sure to follow us on at Mex Soccer Show for all the latest news.